theoretically, if you already have a business, you are a subject matter expert in name your industry, name your niche, whatever product or service you're already selling to a consumer, theoretically, you're an expert in that. So I think just providing value, if you can get online, and it's so easy now, right? We're filming from our phones. If you can get onto a video, or even, you know, typing something out on LinkedIn as a post where you're providing some sort of value, you're giving some sort of advice, you're sharing some sort of experience share, about what worked for you or what didn't work for you, I think that really resonates with people.
Welcome to the Beyond Speaking podcast from Premier Speakers Bureau, featuring in-depth conversations with the world's most in-demand keynote speakers.
Hi, I'm Brian Lord. This is the Beyond Speaking podcast, and our guest today is Lisa Song Sutton. She's an American entrepreneur, real estate investor, TEDx speaker, and venture capitalist. With a background in business litigation, Lisa began her career working in a top Las Vegas law firm before launching and scaling several companies, taking them from zero to millions in revenue across various industries, including real estate, food, and shipping retail. Lisa was the first Miss Nevada of Asian descent and remains actively involved in her community, serving on the boards of Startup NV Nevada, Nevada's largest statewide business incubator, and the Young Presidents Organization Las Vegas chapter. So Lisa, thank you so much for coming on and being part of the Beyond Speaking podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So I know you've done a lot of things, so we'll get into all those different ones. But first of all, I'm curious to know, as an entrepreneur, what made you want to become an entrepreneur in the first place?
Well, I think I became an entrepreneur by accident. I was working at the law firm, just kind of like working my big girl job. And my first company was the cupcakes. And my co-founder with that was just a girlfriend of mine. She called me one day and she was like, hey, I've been making these alcohol cupcakes and just kind of experimenting around with recipes. And I was like, that is such a good idea. You have to do it in Vegas. She was in Florida at the time. So I'm like, Vegas is the place. Like, this is where people come to overspend, overindulge, buy and do things you're not going to buy and do at home. You have to do it here. I'll help you start the company. Meanwhile, I was still working full time at the law firm. And so we literally, like, I made all the mistakes in the beginning that you do as like a new business owner, right? We literally just like started baking in my home kitchen, and then scaled from there.
So what are some of those mistakes that you made that I'm sure maybe some other entrepreneurs can identify with?
And we just jumped in, right? So it, like I said, this is a very close girlfriend of mine. And so I just bought this like giant house in Summerlin, and I was like, oh, like move into my house. I moved her into my house. We like started baking, you know, right out of the kitchen. I think just it's like you're failing forward, right? Because we just didn't know what we didn't know. And so there was no like business plan or really just anything that was focused on future. It was more just like, we were just so excited. Like, this is a great idea. We're going to have so much fun. And we just went for it.
So what are the things, like, let's say you have that excitement and you're talking to a new entrepreneur. What do you say? Okay, you've got this excitement. How do you successfully go from excitement to success?
I think one, figuring out if you are teaming up with someone, which I think is crucial. The reason that I'm able to have so many different endeavors is because I do team up with operational partners. And I think just having those hard conversations up front. Hey, what happens if one of us doesn't want to do this anymore? What happens if, you know, one of us wants to like physically move somewhere else? Just kind of stepping through those questions. And we didn't get to have those discussions until we were kind of more into the business. And I just think having those discussions up front, putting things into an operating agreement, having those roles and responsibilities defined can save a lot of headache in the future.
Yeah, that's interesting. What's your favorite part about being an entrepreneur?
I just love that there's the freedom and flexibility to really, one, get to choose who you work with. And then two, you know, people always claim that it's like for flexibility of time, but in the beginning, you're working 24/7, you know, it's not a 9-to-5. But I think there's definitely some empowerment around the fact that like you have control over what's going on in your company. So as a result, you're directing your future.
Yeah, that is cool. That is one of the fun parts about it. And so I know you work now as a venture capitalist. You know, how do you make the leap from entrepreneur to venture capitalist?
So I had angel invested for about 7 years and then wanted to get into VC, but just wasn't quite sure how. As a business owner, I had never taken in money from outside investors. Mm-hmm. I'd always just invested myself in bootstrapped. But I knew I wanted to get into the VC game. I just wasn't quite sure how. And so I had interviewed with a couple different venture capital firms to initially come in as an LP, as a limited partner. And then when I met my partners with the Veteran Fund, one of whom I knew really well prior to them putting the fund together, but then I had met the other two through this due diligence process. I was just like, I need to be in. Like, I love everything you guys are doing. Like, this really resonates with me. It's super important work. I'm in. And so I initially had come into the fund as an LP. And then a couple of days later, I called Justin Nahama, who's one of my partners, and he was the one I knew the best out of the three. And I was like, what is it going to take for me to be a GP, a general partner? And he was like, it's really not how it works. He's like, we don't just like turn all LPs into GPs, you know? But I said, look, I think I can provide value here. I know I can definitely bring in some LPs. I know what it takes to build companies. Like, I know I can help these founders that we invest in. And importantly, I want a say in the companies we invest in, but I also want a say in how we show up for these founders. Mm-hmm. So traditionally, as an LP, you can lean in and have, you know, more of an active role, but in general, it's a pretty passive role where you invest your funds and you get your quarterly update and you guys do your meetings and stuff, but maybe you help with due diligence a little bit, but it's not a super hands-on role if you don't want it to be. Mm-hmm. But as a general partner, you're much more involved on the day-to-day and on the fund management side. And I thought that would be the best place for me to like really learn.
So you mentioned the Veterans Fund. How are you drawn to that? Like what made you want to start working with veteran led companies?
Yeah. So I come from a military family. My father was a Vietnam veteran, Air Force, and then he worked for the DoD while I was growing up. Mm-hmm. So military families have always been near and dear to my heart. And then as an entrepreneur, 50% of my staff up at the shipping stores by the base are actually military spouses. So I just think that there's, you know, really great synergy. And with the fund in particular, the investment thesis is focused on national security companies. So tech companies that are focused on national security and dual use. And I just think it's very timely and important.
Yeah, definitely. You know, as an entrepreneur and you've worked, you know, on kind of both sides of it, you talk about bootstrapping with entrepreneurship, talking about where you're getting funding elsewhere. How do you decide as an entrepreneur which course to take?
Well, I think it depends on the industry. It depends on the business. There are some companies like tech companies that you need money quickly because it's so expensive for the R&D. It's so expensive for every iteration of product that you're doing. Mm-hmm. But I think in general, most companies can just bootstrap. It may take longer, but then you retain equity as an owner, which I think is super, super important too. So it's a bit of a balancing act. Another hybrid as well is that, you know, you can start and bootstrap and scale. And once you've hit a certain scale point, then you can bring in venture capital. You could always bring it in at a later stage in your company and use that money, because money's like jet fuel to a company. It helps it grow theoretically, right? So, you know, you could always do a hybrid where you start and bootstrap for a certain period of time, and then you bring in outside money later to help you really get to the next level.
One of the other groups that you're involved in is YPO. So what are some of the things you've learned from that and how has that benefited you?
I love YPO. It's definitely been a game changer for me. I joined, I think, 4 years ago now. And one of the biggest things I get out of it is the forum experience. So you have the chapter. So I'm, you know, the Las Vegas chapter. And then they break you up into smaller groups called forums. My forum has 8 people in it. And so you're in this group of peers. And there's non-compete as far as there's no one in your exact same industry, which is a little tough for me because I have so many industries, but, the point is like, you don't have like a direct competitor in your city, in your same forum. Mm-hmm. And the purpose of it is that, you really just kind of create a personal board of advisors of these people who you already have a level of respect for them because they're smart and they've accomplished these things. So you know, like they've got something going on. They've obviously been smart enough to like get to where they are, and it's super inspiring. But then with your forum experience, you get a chance to really just talk about kind of everything and anything. And it's a group of people who are not your business partner. They're not your significant other. They're not your like best friend from back home. It creates a different level of privacy and confidentiality where you can go deep. You can share what's going on in your business. You can share maybe what's going on personally, if that's, you know, significant at the time. And then you have this group of people who, you know, can provide experience shares, and it's a really safe place to do it.
You know, as you're involved in all these different things, I know one of the industries you're also involved in quite a bit is real estate. What's your sort of your background there, and where do you feel like you excel most when it comes to real estate?
Yeah, so I love real estate. I think it's one of the best ways for folks to just build their wealth and build their net worth for themselves and their families. So my parents, while I was growing up, were also real estate investing alongside their jobs. So my dad was literally like a government guy all the way up until he retired. And then my mom opened a hair salon and went to cosmetology school when I was in middle school. So she would stay at home with me, and then cosmetology school, and opened a salon. But they were real estate investing that entire time while I was growing up. So I got to see firsthand the progression and really what real estate wealth can do in one generation. Mm-hmm. So now, fast forward, I own the Engle & Vokers franchise, which is a real estate brand. It's a global brand in over 30 countries, but I own the Las Vegas Henderson Summerlin offices. Mm-hmm. And it's just super fulfilling. I'm no longer a buy-sell agent, but what I love about being an owner is that I get a chance to help train and mentor our agents, and also just look for deal flow for our family office too.
Yeah, that's very cool. I know one of the other things you talk about is, especially with a well-rounded person like this, that a lot of times you still had, despite the successes you had in a lot of different things, that you also were often told, hey, you're not good enough to do this. You're not good enough. And I know a lot of people, whether they're in real estate or entrepreneurship or any sort of thing, they're told that. What are some of the ways, I know you talk about this a lot, but like the seven ways to, or the different ways to overcome that when people are saying, hey, you're not good enough to do this. There's something holding you back. How do people get over that?
I think you just have to focus on your strengths and kind of double down on them, because sometimes whatever the drawbacks are, some of them cannot be changed. I'm a former Miss Nevada, like you had mentioned. When I competed, I was the shortest contestant and the oldest contestant. and this is on short because that was like more of the bigger deal in that industry. And so I hired a pageant coach, and we focused on the things I could control, and then made up as much as we could for the things I couldn't control. So, you know, we focused on interview and on stage question. 50% of your score is actually talking. People don't realize that in the pageant, right? If you look at the areas of competition. And he was like, okay, he was like, that's where we have to knock their socks off. That's where you have to get 10 out of 10s in interview and on stage question. And hopefully you get 8s and 9s in swimsuit and evening gowns so that we can get you the on stage question, because I know you'll nail that. And that's how we're going to win. So very strategic. And then with the gown, I had huge, giant, like clear stripper shoes, like the huge platform in the heel, but you couldn't see them because the gown was all the way to the floor, no slit. So I looked really tall on stage. You just have to take an account, right? Like what are my drawbacks? What are my strengths? What are the strengths I can double down on? And also importantly, is there someone that I can hire, a consultant, a coach, a mentor? Is there someone that I can go to for advice to help me succeed in this?
Cool. Yeah. And so this is being a complete novice in that, like, how tall are you supposed to be? Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know how that is.
Yeah. So they prefer, you know, it's kind of like a 5'8 to 5'10 range. I'm like 5'3. I'm just small. And so, that was like a big problem. It was a big problem when I was competing.
That's so right. See, I've learned a lot, and that's one of the things I've learned today. I had no idea how tall you had to be for that. So in doing that, so as part of Miss Nevada and or Nevada, my wife is from California. I'm from Indiana. So we say it, I say it the wrong way every time. So I don't know if Nevada okay. or Nevada is the right way.
Nevada.
Okay. She always corrects me. You know, from that, as part of that, you were really, really involved with nonprofits, and that really helped you make connections. So, you know, what did you enjoy and what are some of the things you're still doing in the nonprofit world?
It was an incredible experience. And I did nearly 500 community appearances, volunteering in schools, reading in hospitals, working with countless nonprofits. So fast forward 10 years later, I still have business connections, personal relationships, just colleagues, network from that time period. And I just think that's a great way to lean in and ingratiate yourself within the community is by volunteering with nonprofits. So I serve on the board of Nevada Policy Research Institute, which is a nonprofit here that's focused on pro-growth economic policy, but kind of like on the fun side of charity, certainly Nevada SPCA, they're our state's largest no-kill shelter. And then one of my corgis, Cupcake, she's certified as a hospital pet therapy dog. And so actually, we'll go later today, every Friday, we go up to Summerlin Hospital and we visit the kids at the hospital. And it's just such a huge win-win. It's like an hour out of my day, no big deal, once a week. And my dog loves it, first off. She like eats it up. Like, what's this magical place where everyone loves her, you know? She eats it up. And then, you know, the kids love it. The kids, it's so nice. Like, it's such a nice little reprieve and break for them. The parents love it because it's also kind of a break for them. And then, like, all the staff, nurses, no one knows my name. They all know Cupcake. Like, we walk in, they're like, Cupcake. Like, they're so excited to see her. And it's just awesome. She just brings joy.
Yeah, that's very cool. It is kind of like bringing that specific thing to it. You know, and the other thing too, is when you were there with Miss Nevada, I'll say it right. You know, with that, a lot of it was about building that up. So I know you talk about like the seven different things that people have to build their own brand. So I know not everybody's coming from a background where they do have that you know, sort of celebrity type or something where they're well-known in that way. What are some of the key ways that people can build their brand for business success?
I think the biggest thing is just providing value, because theoretically, if you already have a business, you are a subject matter expert in name your industry, name your niche, mm-hmm. Whatever product or service you're already selling to a consumer, theoretically, you're an expert in that. So I think just providing value, if you can get online, and it's so easy now, right? We're filming from our phones. If you can get onto a video or even, you know, typing something out on LinkedIn as a post where you're providing some sort of value, you're giving some sort of advice, you're sharing some sort of experience share about what worked for you or what didn't work for you, I think that really resonates with people.
As you've done all these different things, you know, I guess I'm always curious to know, with somebody who's been that accomplished, especially at a younger age, you know, what are you most proud of the things that you've done and accomplished?
Well, we joke that it's taken me 14 years to become an overnight success. but I think I'm just, you know, most proud of the fact that I get a chance to impact others. You know, obviously as business owners, you know, it's job creation. You get a chance to provide a job for someone else who gets to provide that, you know, for them and their family. And I just, you know, think about just all the unique experiences I've had throughout the years with our companies, of not only the people that we get to work with, but also the people that we get to serve, the people that we sell our cupcakes to, or the people that we help buy and sell houses. It creates this ripple effect where as an entrepreneur, you've like created this thing, and then you have other people that you team up with to help you build the thing. And then they're going out and actually executing and like I said, you know, serving your customers. Mm-hmm. And it's just a really cool ripple effect.
That's great. That's awesome. Well, Lisa, thank you so much for joining us here on the Beyond Speaking podcast. For those watching, listening, make sure to subscribe, rate, and review, and go to premierspeakers.com to check out more about Lisa Song Sutton. So Lisa, thank you so much again for being part of the Beyond Speaking podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us for the Beyond Speaking podcast. To learn more about today's guest, visit premierspeakers.com. Make sure to subscribe and leave a review wherever you listen.